Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pannier, joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Lucco. And this week, Kevin and I are honored to welcome the brand new manager of the Lake Country Dockhounds, Ken Huckabee, to the show. Ken, thanks for joining us this week.
Oh, it's my pleasure to join you guys.
So, Ken, let's just talk about how do you become the Dockhounds manager?
Well, it's a long, arduous process. I'm just kidding. My son was obviously playing in the league the last 3 years up here, and he told me that I probably would really enjoy managing and in these kind of settings. And so when he called my wife and informed her that they had fired the previous manager here, and my wife says, hey, we should send your resume. So we just sent my resume to Rob and got a phone call about a day later, and about 3 days after that, I was up here managing.
That doesn't sound like much of a long, arduous process there. But did you know, your son had played, as you mentioned, here in the league. Did you know much about the teams and what the American Association was about?
I knew what it was about. I had interviewed with Winnipeg last offseason. Obviously, didn't get the job. And so I knew a little bit about the league. I didn't know if I was going to be over my skis as far as the responsibilities that the manager has to carry in leagues like these. But I actually fell into a really, really good program with a lot of good people surrounding it.
Well, I've been noticing since you've taken over the team, a lot of changes over the last week. Is this kind of just try to developing the right culture? You're looking for guys that fit your style of play. What's kind of precipitated that so far?
A little bit of both. You know, Tom and I sit down and talk every day and really like the nucleus of the team that we have here. It's a very talented group. Pitching staff is solid. Some really good hitters in the lineup. They were just playing like they were trying not to lose when I got here. So I got to observe a couple days before I actually took over the reins. And when you come in mid-season, you can't just kind of bull rush the team with how you want them to adjust to you. It's not our job as managers. I have to adjust to them and then sort of start dripping in what I expect out of them. And that's kind of what we've done. Every day we'll have a new meeting, real informal, and I'll just drip a couple of my expectations on them, and they'll perform them that night. And they've caught on quicker than I thought.
Yeah, let's talk about that a minute. That dripping looks like it's having quite the effect. 4-game winning streak, the longest in franchise history. What do you think has kind of led to the success of that so far?
Just mentality in the players. The first couple of nights I was here, I walked through the dugout, and it was quiet. There wasn't a lot of energy going on with the guys. They were just kind of accepting their fate the way it was, and if you walk through our clubhouse or our dugout now during a game or after a game, you feel the energy of what they're showing up every day with the purpose and a mission to get better. You know, we put the focus on getting better. The wins will come as the guys continue trying to get better. And so I've kind of taken the hands-on approach of being more like affiliated ball, where, you know, I know a lot of times independence, the wins and losses are the key program to it, but we've kind of taken on the role of trying to make the players better. If we make the players better, than the product we put on the field will be better.
You know, when you got the job with Lake Country, I went out and did some research, and I came across the introductory video when you were named manager of the Buffalo Bisons in 2020. And the observation I made from the video was just your approach to managing the players and to making the players better. To me, I just felt like, okay, you're going to be a good fit for this league. And obviously the results have been there already. Do you approach this differently than you were approaching a AAA job? Do you feel a little less pressure that I'm not having to get these guys ready for the majors? I'm just trying to make them better players.
No, not one bit. I don't treat it any differently because, you know, one of the first things I dripped into the clubhouse was, wherever you are, that's your major leagues. and you need to approach your job like that's your major league. So right now we're in, you know, we're in the American Association, we're in Lake Country, that's our big leagues right now. And so we need to approach each day like it's our big leagues. It's the same message I would have given to AAA players. You know, this is your big leagues. I know you, there's one step ahead of you, but this is where we have to start learning how to be what that is up there. And for these guys here, their job, what we ultimately want to do, Tom and I, is get these guys back into affiliated ball. So this is their big leagues, and that's the way we approach every day.
You know, Ken, I'm kind of curious. Jim Bennett is a guy that Kevin and I have had a lot of respect for and has had success in this league. I'm wondering, because of your time in the major leagues, did you feel like maybe there was a different sense of when you're speaking to the team, they're like, hey, this guy really knows what he's talking about because he's been up at the top level, and there might be a little bit more attention to listening to you than maybe a different manager managing the club?
I don't necessarily believe that. I really don't. I really believe it comes into the techniques and the manner in which you approach players, because I've gone through my career and I've some of the best coaches I've ever had never stepped a foot on the field. But it's how they approached me and how they talked to me and how they pulled information from me, which is what now I do with these guys, is I'm just pulling information from them. I'm not really coaching them. I'm making them actually more self-aware of what they're doing. And that leads to changes when they become self-aware. So I don't necessarily think my resume, so to speak, really makes a difference when I'm talking to them. I think it's more in the approach on how we talk to them.
This East is a crazy division. You know, Kevin and I talked before the season began that I could see any one of these teams finishing in first or any one of them finishing in last. When you look at this, what is your kind of feel about the East Division and your ability for the team to take this division?
My focus is on Lake Country. It's not on Milwaukee. It's not on Chicago. It's not on King County. It's my focus is on Lake Country, and so I don't want the players to get caught up in the noise of other teams. We show up every day, focusing on ourselves, focusing on making ourselves better. And then we'll go play the division. So I don't want myself to get caught up in thinking about how competitive the division is. So we just need to focus on what we need to do each day.
Do you see a possibility of your son coming back to join you there in Lake Country?
No. He decided we got released from Fargo about a week ago, about 4 or 5 days ago. And he decided to call it a career and be done with it. So as much as I would have loved to have him come join me and let him be a part of this, it was ultimately his decision, and he decided to go home.
Now I'm kind of curious from you, because it's more than just your personal style leading the team. What do you look for in your coaches to try to get that message out to the team of what you're looking for?
Prepared, just showing up every day prepared, having Wags and Reggie and Brandon, who's the staff here right now, just making sure that when we step out of our office, we're prepared, that the players see that we're prepared to tackle each day. And also just energy. Do they show up every day ready to work with energy? And because the players will feed off that. If you show up unenthusiastic about the work we're about to do, they're gonna give you the same thing. So I just look for, are they prepared when they step into the room every day to go to work?
Now, looking at the way that the team has been playing over the last week, a little bit of a tough series there against King County. Then you guys take the last game of that series, come home and sweep a very good Winnipeg team out there. As you look, I understand you don't want to look too far ahead in the season out there, but as you look at this team, do you feel like this is a team that you can roll with right at this moment and wind up winning the division with?
It's still so early. I mean, we still have so much to play still, but I'm very, very happy with the team that we have right now. I'm extremely excited to show up every day to work and work with the kids that are coming into play. I truly am. And if that feeling is mutual between the players and the staff, then of course I think we'll be there in the end to give the thing a run.
you know, and checking out statistics. I was checking out the pitching statistics and talking to a rival manager over the weekend. Yeah, one heck of a pitching staff here, and I imagine that's, you know, just your starting rotation, that's got to be a great building block to try to eventually build something special with this team.
It really is. I've been impressed with our I'm impressed with even our bullpen arms. The starting arms have been spectacular, but even the guys we're bringing in from the bullpen, I've been like, I can't think of anything negative to say about our whole pitching staff. I think they all are quality guys. They're all in there fighting. They're all in there competing. But the starting pitching, you're right. There's five tremendous arms there.
So in all your days in baseball, have you ever been on a losing end where your guy has thrown a no-hitter? I mean, that's some pretty rare territory there, what Mike Schorn did last week against Kane County.
I've seen it happen. I don't know if I was on the winning or losing end of it, but I've seen it happen before, and it's usually only happened in those doubleheaders when there's not a lot of innings to make up on. But yeah, that was a rarity and a tough game. And I think if you guys are talking about the switch that was turned with this team, I think the doubleheader night was the switch that turned this team. Because we got no hit and lost, and then we hit the 3-run homer in the top of the 7th to tie it, and then we lost in the bottom of the 7th, and that one stung the players a lot. So I told you when I was walking through the dugout, I really didn't feel anything. And then after that second loss in that doubleheader, when I walked through the clubhouse after the game, I could feel it. Like they weren't happy, and I could tell that a change was coming. And then the next night they came out and did a really good job in the 4-game sets.
Well, talking about that pitching staff, it looked like that was the turning point of that offense. You come out with 11 runs the next night. You guys have scored at least 5 in every game since then. Marcus Chu has been crazy for you. It looks like this team is really gelling offensively right now.
They are, you know, and it comes down to the relationships, right? And the drip and the approach that we need to take as a team. We obviously play in a small ballpark. Where a lot of home runs can be hit. But if we're a team that's trying to do that, I don't think our team is built to slug with other teams. I think our team is built to just produce runs after runs after runs, double after double after double. And they've kind of starting to buy into that philosophy. And I've gotten myself in the cage with the guys every day before the game, doing flips with them, talking with them about approach, talking about timing, and just trying to get an overall team philosophy on what our approach offensively is in the game.
Do you see at this point that, you guys are putting up a lot of runs, not hitting a lot of home runs, as you mentioned, you know, a park that you would think would get a little bit more power production out of that. Is that something that you feel the club needs to be a little bit better, or this offense, the way it is, can go out and win games still 7-5 or 7-1 or whatever if they need to?
Yeah, that's the point, is we only play half our games in this park. So when we go to, I've never been to most of the other parks in this league, but I've been to Kane County before when I'd managed in Lansing. And, you know, the first night we go in there, the wind's blowing in and nothing's going to go out, and we don't score any runs. We need to be able to go to these other fields that may be a little bit bigger than ours and still be able to produce runs. But there's not a switch you can turn on between being at home and on the road when you're going up there and you're hitting. So we just need to be that team that just tries to, you know, we'll bunt guys over with first and second. We're going to steal some bases. We're going to hit doubles in the gap. And every once in a while, we'll run out of the ballpark on you. I just think that's what this team is built, how this team is built.
Ken, I'm wondering, your time in the Blue Jays organization, both as a player and as a manager, even at the overall major league level for you, are there managers that you come across that you were like, okay, boy, when I become a manager, I want to do things like that or something. Can people kind of influence your own managerial style?
Well, I had a lot of, obviously, I played for 18 years in 9 organizations. So I had a lot of really, really good managers, and I can count on one hand, probably on a couple fingers, how many managers I really didn't like playing for in my career. And so I really pulled things from a lot of managers. As over the years, I had Glenn Hoffman, who was the third base coach in San Diego forever. I had him at every level with the Dodgers, from rookie ball to AAA, and really liked his style. And then I was fortunate enough to know Tommy Lasorda, and then Buck Showalter, Francona, and just got to know some guys and pick their brains when I was a player. And they knew that I wanted to go into managing after my career was over. So they were very helpful in helping me learn the ins and outs of what they do. So I pull a lot of things from the different people I've had.
Now, I'm not asking you to give me any names, but could you tell me of the couple of managers that you didn't particularly like their style? What was it about them that you didn't really like?
There was one manager that everything that came out of his mouth was negative all the time. Okay. Even when you won, he didn't address the team like good job. It was just he'd walk into his office and disappear, and then if you lost the next night, he'd chew everybody out. And it wasn't fun. It felt like you couldn't do anything and this was in AAA too. It felt like you could do nothing to get ahead with this guy. And he had a lot of pull in the organization also. And then I actually was a hitting coach with another manager when I was starting my coaching career, that our team wasn't good that year. And when we lost games, we had no big leaguers on our team, and our team sucked. And then all of a sudden, if we won a game, he wanted to look at the stats and see how far out of first place we were. So he was riding an emotional roller coaster every single night on wins and losses. And I told myself, I'm not going to do that. If I ever get the helm, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to ride that roller coaster. We'll just accept fate as it comes as the season goes on.
In talking to a lot of managers, I sense that the game itself and how a manager would deal with players is a lot different than when you were playing Major League Baseball. One of the things I hear is that players really want to hear the big whys of everything. Are you finding that the way people manage you is different than the way you have to manage now, or is that kind of a little bit of an exaggeration that some of the managers are telling me?
I had really good managers that always gave me the why in my career. So, and then I was fortunate enough when I was with the Blue Jays that we did a lot of really, really cool leadership training stuff over there with the Blue Jays. And they taught us really how to pull things out of players, and which is giving them the why and also letting them lead the way. And you facilitate the way through the conversation so that they're leading themselves to the answers, so that you're not giving them answers. I think that's what the managers you're talking about would be talking about, is we were just given the answers a lot of times. Do this when you go. You know, when you go up to the plate, get your hands higher. There was no why behind it with a lot of, like, hitting coaches or whatever. Now you can kind of facilitate that situation where you're doing work with the guy and you can see you want his hands up. Maybe you expose a weakness in a drill and he can't get to the ball. And he's going to say, hey, how come I can't get to that? Now he's just opened the door up for dialogue. And then you can start drawing from there.
I'm wondering how you feel, because I know in within the organization, a lot of people are making a decision about the status of somebody, whether they move up or get dropped down or cut. You're the guy at the top here. So you're the guy making all the decisions. Is it lonely at the top? How are you liking making decisions like that?
Well, like I said, I fell into a situation here with Tom and Trish up in the front office for us here that, you know, we're kind of doing it all together. We're all in the same boat, rowing the same direction. And so any decisions that are made we're doing it more collaboratively as a group than me just saying, get rid of this guy. We're kind of coming together and talking about it, and we all have different feelings on things, and I think we're, and as a team is being built and put together a little differently, like you said, over the last few days, hopefully people can see that we're doing a pretty good job of putting this team together the right way.
You know, one of my favorite questions that Kevin asked Dom Sturm, I would like to ask you as well. So how long did it take you to get Economowoc said correctly?
I still can't. Every time I say it, Tom tells me I sound like a foreigner.
Just call it Old Town.
Just call it Old Town?
Just call it Old Town. You know, okay, good enough.
That's what I'll do from now on, that Old Town.
We have, where I live, we have Owatonna next to us, and everyone just calls it Old Town. So, makes it a lot simpler.
I'll do that from now on. Economowoc. Did I say that right?
Yeah, we agree with you. So we'll go in there. Okay. We like it.
Okay.
Excellent.
I still can't say any of the cities I drive through to get out to my apartment. So if you ask me where I live, I couldn't tell you what it is. It starts with a P. That's all I know.
Oh, Pewaukee.
I have no idea. I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, that area is strange. You got Pewaukee and then Oconomowoc and then Waukesha, even Milwaukee itself. It's a real different area.
Nick Harold today named a pitcher of the week. How impressed are you with his performance as taking over the job?
Outstanding. Outstanding young man with outstanding talent, too. Good kid, quiet, just goes about his business, gets his work done. Extremely proud of him for what he's done his last couple of outings to earn that honor, too. Just really, really happy that we have him.
The interesting thing I find about him is that two professional seasons, both in Lake Country, both have been very good years. Are you a little surprised that somebody's not giving him more of an opportunity at affiliate ball?
100%. You know what I mean? Some of these guys I'm watching play, and I'm thinking, how are these guys still here? But I, like I said, I'm new to the league. I don't know how it works. And I'm surprised every day.
You know, I'm surfing through Point Streak here, just checking your stats out in the last 7 days, and there's no mistake in how this team has turned around, because the batters in the last week have hit .336, and your pitching's at a 2.57 clip. I mean, that's going to win you a lot of ball games, obviously.
And also a very tough clip to maintain for another 80 games, to be 100% honest, right? So you got to be prepared for when this might dip down. You know, right now we're kind of riding a little bit of a high. You know, we're going to have the dips go. It's just a matter of how the team reacts when we have these little dips through the season.
Ken, you talked about working with Tom and Trish to help build this team. A lot of the managers in this league are in complete control of player procurement. Are you involved in finding players as well? Are you kind of just focusing right now on the managing of the club and letting Tom take care of that at this point?
Yeah, Tom's pretty much like comes to me with players that Tom has starting to accumulate a network that he has, and we brought in Reggie Harris as my bench coach, and Reggie is really good at procuring players, and that's why Reggie came in at the same time as I did, is because Reggie has a background in that. And so they all get together, and I tell them, you guys get on your little text chain and you decide what's best, and then we'll all come together and we'll see if it fits in to what we're doing. So Tom's done a great job so far, and it's been put a lot more on his plate to do this procuring of the players and managing our budget and all that stuff. So, and then Reggie's been a big addition to the staff, helping out with that.
I assume your time with Toronto kind of helps you, though, in the sense that they would let you know maybe if a guy was being released and be like, hey, Ken, if you're interested, we have a great third baseman down here at Double A or something. Is that something you see potentially working out for you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's other people I know around that don't know I'm doing this yet that I'll reach out to. I reached out to a couple people I know in the Phillies already about players, and some of the players I actually know. I've actually texted 4 or 5 ex-Blue Jay guys to see what their interest is in coming back and playing after they got released. And Tom knows that if a player needs to be contacted, I'm more than willing to jump on the phone and get on the phone with them.
How you liking a bat dog? Bringing balls and bats out.
Oh, it's awesome. It's very cool. I thought you were talking about the car I drive that has Louis the dog count on it. That's what I thought you were talking about.
I didn't
about.
Know that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I didn't know you had got to see that. So if Kevin and I come down, do we get a ride in that with you?
Yeah, you can. Like, if you're just driving on the freeway and you see a little car going down that says Louie with the dog hounds all over it, that's me cruising down the road.
Well, right on. They like that. Awesome. Are you a guy who goes out and gets to enjoy the fishing in the local area there and really kind of can't focus on that right now?
Really can't focus on that. And I can't tell you how much I would like to enjoy that a ton. Like, today would have been a great day to go out there and rip some lips a little bit, but still too early in the process.
This week, big series, Fargo coming to town. They're playing exceptionally well, defending champions. Then you travel on to go down there to Kane County, have a little bit of a road trip coming on, 9 straight games coming out of that with Kane County. What are you looking for out of this team over the next, with Fargo coming and then having that 9-game road trip?
Just consistency, doing what we've been doing. That's all I'm looking for. Just getting these guys used to having a routine every day and making sure that their schedule is set. Because as an athlete, you want to make sure that the day is set so your routine has a chance to play out every day. And as a manager, it's our job to set up the day so that they can go through their routines every day and nothing gets missed. And so I'll do my job to make sure that they have the time to get through their routines. And then when the game starts, just let them play.
That is fantastic. Well, Ken, you're a new guest. We get to teach you a little something here about being on the show. So we always give our guests the opportunity to give us a final thought about whatever you'd like to talk about. The floor is yours.
Oh, wow, you could have given me a warning about that beforehand.
Well, right, it's more fun this way.
All right, so if I'm going to go fishing, where is the best lake to fish at around here?
Well, that's a tough question. You know, I'm going to be honest, I'm not a fishing guy myself. Red hair and fair skin, Ken, so I don't spend a lot of time out in the sun, to be honest with you. So that's a good question. Well, we have to find that out from somebody.
It's Wisconsin with all the fish fries. They got to get the fish from somewhere, right? So I imagine there's got to be plenty of good places. I just don't know where they are.
There you go. I got you. I gave you guys some research to do.
We're going to find it out for you, too. That's awesome. Ken Huckabee, thanks for joining us this week.
It was my pleasure. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, thanks for doing this.
Well, Kevin, great having Ken Huckabee on there. And as you were mentioning with those statistics, this Doc Towns team looked like, you know, things are heading in the right direction.
It's got to be one of the better stretches they've had since they've been in this league. And, you know, I think that's something you worry about when you bring a new franchise into the league. You worry that if they're not competitive for a few years, you're going to lose your market. They're going to think, well, boy, why should we go out and watch them? They never win. So I just think with these teams, when you're a newer team in the league, it's not like professional sports used to be, when if you're an expansion team, you're expected to be a cellar dweller for quite a few years. So it's not like that anymore. You're especially with this level of baseball too, where it's very easy if you're doing your homework and putting the right team together, where you can be competitive right away. So I think it definitely has to be a good sign for the Doc Collins organization that this team just seems to be clicking right now, and we'll see that carries over in the next few weeks here.
Well, Kevin, let's talk a little bit about Nick Herold, named today by us as the pitcher of the week. Also, the American Association chose him. 1-1, 1.29 ERA in two starts. This young man, not drafted by anybody coming out of Winona State, but really has established himself as an extremely good pitcher in this league.
He has. It's been that's what I like about this league in general, is that unlike your affiliated leagues where it's all players that were the best guys on their teams or played Division I baseball, you know, you got a guy at Winona State University, that's D2 baseball, and it's really an unheralded program. And for a guy to come out of that and just be putting up the numbers that Herold has so far, it's impressive. And you know, if there weren't for leagues like this, where would someone like Nick Herold get a shot at being noticed? There wouldn't be anywhere. So hopefully this leads to bigger and better things for him. Obviously, you know, the scouts are going to be looking for that fastball, so that's going to be key for Herold, is to have the velocity up where it's going to catch a scout's eyes. But you look at the numbers, especially for a young pitcher, they're also going to be looking at your control. Well, last year he walked 21 and 32 innings. He's pitched 26 innings so far this year and has walked only 6, so he's worked on his command, obviously. So, you know, things are trending up for him, so hopefully the right scout will take a leap of faith and sign him, and maybe we'll see Herold moving up a major league organization sooner than later. But until then, he's going to be a great piece of that Doc Collins rotation.
You know, Kevin, you and I have talked about this a lot over the last 7 years now, about wins, because sometimes it's like run scored. Sometimes, you know, you're benefiting from how your team performed, really. But you look at a guy that's 3-1 on a club that, you know, really struggled out of the gate here and was, you know, trying to establish some kind of winning formula that really wasn't coming together for them. But he has 3 of their 8 victories with a 3.11 ERA. You feel like this team knows when he goes out on the mound that they're going to get an outstanding performance out of them. For a youngster like that to have that kind of command that your team can rally behind, I think says a lot beyond just how good his stuff is.
And you look at the innings pitched, 26 innings in 4 starts. So it's also helping the bullpen out there. He's getting deeper in the games too. And I think that's always a big help. And sometimes it's kind of an understated perk of having a guy that can get deeper in the games, where you're not, the guys in the pen know that, hey, you know what, I don't think a lot of us are going to have to pitch tonight because this guy's going to get 6 or 7 innings in.
Well, let's jump onto this here, Kevin, because immediately after it happened, I asked you, hey, so what do you think about Mike Schwerin getting a no-hitter? You said, that's not a no-hitter, Rob. The league officially recognized it. Give us your thoughts on the first no-hitter in Doc Hound's history.
Well, it's a no-hitter in the purest form of the definition, but come on, it was only 6 innings. You know, if you're watching Man versus Food, if the guy only eats 2/3 of a burger, does he get the T-shirt? No. So in my eyes, yes, no-hitter by definition of a no-hitter because it was in a shorter game, but come on, he only pitched 2/3 of a game. So in my eyes, not really a notable no-hitter.
That may be your best metaphor ever. I just want to throw that right now. Best example ever. So Well, that's fantastic. But the club, man, I mean, you got to like these Doc Hounds. 4-game winning streak, the longest in franchise history. 6 games out of first place now. And the Chicago Dogs this last weekend, Kevin, got a little reality check from the Milwaukee Milkmen. Suddenly find themselves struggling a little bit.
My faith in the Milkmen has been rewarded, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. Absolutely.
You know, I was on with Dan Vaughn during the Explorers Cougars game on Friday night, and Dan flat out asked, okay, who's going to win the league? And this was before any result in Chicago. I stuck to my guns, and I thought, I think Milwaukee can win the whole thing yet. I just think Anthony Perone is that good at going out and getting players, and I think there's a base to work with on that team. They're getting good starting pitching, where I think this could be a team that, if things roll right in the postseason, this team could win a championship. And we saw it this weekend in Chicago with a 3-game sweep of the Dogs, a Dogs team that was absolutely rolling before then.
Well, let's stick with Milwaukee there for the moment. We'll come back here to Chicago in a second then, Kevin. So 6 straight victories for this club moves them up to 2 games behind Chicago. And as you mentioned, they're not, you know, passively or narrowly defeating teams. 1-1-run victory in the 6-game winning streak. The rest of these have been at least 3 runs or more. They're handling their business, and they're not giving opponents really an opportunity to get in games with them, it looks like.
And I think another key part of that has been the pitching has been much improved for the Milkmen, because let's face it, when they were struggling earlier, it was, you know, guys like us were saying, okay, well, they're not getting the starting pitching they're expecting. But if you look at their stats in the last 7 days, the staff as a whole is at a 2.64 ERA, even with Jose Fuentes, who's been very good in this league, struggling, although he did get a win yesterday. But, you know, Frankie Bartle is making Anthony Brown look like a genius for moving him to the rotation. And, you know, Ryan Zimmerman, you get what you get with him. He's inconsistent, but he'll go out there and he'll battle. So Gregory Vasquez had a good start. So, you know, there's pieces there. And, well, we know he'll find arms in the bullpen. Peyton Gray is back from an injury, and he's still got Nate Hadley. So that's a 1-2 punch that a lot of teams would love to have. So I just think it's there for the Milkmen. If the bats can get going, because we know that Drew Ward, he's picked it up as of late, but it hasn't been a Drew Ward-like start. If you get Drew Ward hitting like he can, you know the bats are going to produce the runs. And if the pitching can hold up their end, I just see this team being right there at the end to make a championship run again.
You know, I have to tell you, Kevin, kind of a funny circumstance happened. I'm laughing about it, at least. So, in a write-up I had this week, I had wrongfully looked at the stat on the Milwaukee Milkmen box score and saw Cambalago. I thought it was home run 7, but it was hit by pitch 7. Okay, I read that wrong. So I said that he'd homered for the 7th time in the season, and our good friend Tammy Sikarski wrote to me and said, Rob, that was hit by pitch, which I still think is crazy. 7 hit by pitches already this early in the season is a little absurd to me.
That's my part.
So I fixed that. Yeah, exactly. So I fixed that, and what does the guy do? He goes out and homers in 3 straight games. I just thought that was kind of funny, is that this guy who hadn't homered all season long is now all of a sudden on a little bit of a tear. And I believe that Tammy told me that this is one of her players that she is housing this season. So, you know, they're getting – what's funny about Milwaukee is it seems like, you know, it's cliche, I guess, Kevin, to say it's a different person every night. It's just – it's whatever this team needs, somebody figures out a way to provide it. That's really what I look at this Milwaukee club. And it's been one of the trademarks of Anthony Brown. He just finds guys that know how to contribute in such a way as to keep his team rolling.
And, you know, he's been so good in his short career that if there is a hole in the lineup, he will go out and he will find a guy to fill it. It's amazing for a guy that was never in an affiliated organization how well he is at going out and finding players.
Absolutely. And Nate Hadley turned things around. He was struggling early on in the season. He's been dominant of late. Christian Young is being fantastic. You talked about, you know, another guy that Frankie Barteau was a great addition to that starting rotation. Christian Young taking over in the starting rotation this season. He's been fantastic. It's just, this is a group that you really just look at and you think, man, because now this bullpen has finally worked out their kinks. There's just not a spot that I look at this club and I go, wow, you know, this could be their Achilles heel. So I thought very seriously that this team would be at least in the division finals in the playoffs, but you're right. They could definitely be winning it all. As we saw last season, they could have won it all last year too. So exciting club.
But you know the way this league rolls, you know, we pump their tires 1 week and the next week they've stumbled. So, you know, big series coming up, I think, with Kane County going to Franklin Field for 3 games, with Kane County on a pretty good roll themselves. So it should be a good 3-game set before Milwaukee hosts a reeling Sioux City Club for the weekend.
And let's talk about how quickly the tide can turn for you. You have a Chicago club that goes into that series with Milwaukee, winners of 10 of their last 12, and not just winning games. I mean, you know, swept Winnipeg, go down there and take 5 of 6 out of Cleburne, take 2 out of 3 from Fargo, take 2 out of 3 in Kane County, 2 out of 3 from Lincoln to start the season. This is just a club that was going out and just handling their business. They just looked like they were on a roll. Then they come to Milwaukee and Milwaukee comes to town to them in Chicago, and they just have nothing for the Milkmen. I mean, they just got beat. 5 total runs in that series. I mean, it's early out in the season, but I think you kind of have to look at that and go, what happened here?
It's tough, and, you know, the season will have peaks and valleys, and right now, obviously, it's a valley right now that the Dogs find themselves in. But look at their overall work for the season. It's got them at the top of the division, so I guess you just try to brush off the weekend against the Milkmen and just move on with a big road trip going to Winnipeg and then the Fargo-Moorhead before coming home.
The interesting thing for me, Kevin, out of the week was that Tyler Palm has been spectacular with this stuff, and Trevor Lane has been very good for them as well. But he had a little bit of a hiccup last week in his one start, gave up 4 runs in that contest. Well, they still wound up winning the game, but he didn't look as invincible as he looked early on in the season. But they still come away with the victory over Winnipeg. I looked at that as you know, I think these have been the two gems that Butch Hobson has really found this season in Palm and Lane. And as long as those two continue to be 90 or 80% of where they're at right now, I think this team really has no worries whatsoever. And that's two of the best starters in the league so far this year.
And they've needed to, because you got a guy like Jake Dahlberg, who was really good in 2021 for this ball club. He got hit hard twice over the week, giving up 5 runs in 5 innings to Winnipeg, still getting a win. No decision, mind you. But 6 runs and didn't get through 4 innings yesterday against the Milkmen. So, whereas the guys you mentioned have been nice finds, you hope that they can get Dahlberg straight out if they want to get on a run.
Let's move down to Kane County. Kevin, as you mentioned, this is another team on a roll at this particular point. 3-game winning streak, 8-2 in their last 10, which is the best record within the division itself. And all of a sudden, George Samus has this team winning, and it's been the older guys leading the way for this team.
Yeah, you know, I talked to Samus before the game on Saturday night, and he's bemoaning, and I think rightly so. There is a lack of offense on this team, but like you said, it's the veterans like Cornelius Randolph, like a T.J. Bennett, Josh Allen, that have been the catalyst for what offense they have been able to get. And Jimmy Kerrigan, the two games I saw live, it looked like he's making good contact and hitting the ball hard again, and sometimes he's just not getting the results. But, you know, these guys have good resumes, and if they can start hitting the ball well again with the pitching they got, I think Kane County's going to be right up there at the top of the division, much like last season.
You know, it's good news, I think, because the vet spots on this team are dominated by infielders, and this group has just really not performed. But just last week, you know, Josh Allen, a guy we love very much, tied for the team leading homers with four, had two homers last week and hit .333. T.J. Bennett, who had one homer through the first 14, 15 games of the season, three last week, all of a sudden catching fire for them too. And you start to feel like these guys are saying, you know, hey, look, we've read our baseball cards. We know what we're supposed to be doing out here, and we're supposed to be hitting better than what we're doing. And they're getting it out of that. And I think when you have veteran leadership and ability coming together to deliver for you, you make a club very difficult. And right now, Kane County, I think, could be the most dangerous team, because I think everybody's talking about Chicago or Milwaukee, and Kane County's kind of flying under the radar right now.
And that was a similar script from last year, too, where, you know, all the talk in the league was the Chicago-Milwaukee thing, and Kane County and even Cleburne, nobody was talking about them, but all of a sudden at the end of the year, those were two of the tougher teams. You know, T.J. Bennett, as I was watching the game on Friday night, I'm thinking, well, boy, he is due. And as soon as I even thought that, first pitch to Bennett, he goes opposite field for a home run. So if you can get Bennett hit in the way he did in Australia over the winter, that's gonna be a catalyst to really get this offense back on track. You know, a guy like Pete Cosma, former major leaguer, you expect more out of him. He showed me some life on Saturday night with three hits. So, you know, maybe it'll come together. Sometimes guys just start off a little slow, and as we know, George Samus is constantly looking for players that are available. So if guys are going to continue not to produce, don't be surprised if you see some moves made in Kane County to get the offense bolstered even more.
Well, if some of these other teams are starting to rally a little bit here, then you know that somebody's got to be on the short end of that. And the Gary South Shore Railcats have a very tough week, 2-5, 2-6 for them. I still want to say 2-6. Why should I be saying that? No, I should be saying that. Okay, I'm going to keep saying that. Okay. So they lose tonight, 3-2 to Sioux Falls. Tough week against Milwaukee. They wind up dropping the final three games of that four-game set. Then two crazy games on Friday and Saturday with a ton of runs scored in those games, 48 runs scored between the two of them, then a 1-0 victory for Sioux Falls. Yesterday they went 3-2 today. You know, when it looks like, you know, the thing you hate, Kevin, you get great pitching and no hitting, or you get incredible hitting and no pitching, and that looks like that's the Railcats' story over the last few days here.
I have to admit, I have not seen a ton of the Gary South Shore Railcats this year. So my last stop on my road trip this week was to the Birdcage on Sunday afternoon. I thought, okay, I want to learn a little bit about this ball club. I want to see it in action. I want to see what these guys are doing so well to produce all these runs. They're going up against Neil Lang, who has struggled mightily this year and was pitching on 3 days rest. And everything was there for just another wild game at the Birdcage where maybe both teams were going to put up double-digit runs, and sat down for the ball game, and 2 hours later, I'm on the road. So, folks, I don't know any more about the Railcats offense than I did before the game started.
Yeah, I think the team has to be a little concerned about that. Pitching rebounded for them great over the weekend, and that's huge. But they gave up 10 runs on Thursday nights in Milwaukee, then 13 runs to Sioux Falls on Friday and 11 more on Saturday. I mean, I get it, it's the Birdcage, and it can be a little difficult to hold teams down, but I don't care what circumstance you're in. When you give up 34 runs like that, you have to be kind of scratching your head. So that, I'm sure Lamar Rogers happier to see a better pitching performance, but, you know, now you're back to those three guys that got hammered over the weekend, coming back in the rotation here as you welcome Kleber and a team that we know can hit. And I think this is going to be a very interesting week to see what that 3-5 in the rotation looks like for him, especially now that Harrison is out for them for a little bit here. So it's a very interesting stretch for Gary, I think we're going to see over the next week.
Well, that's going to be a battle from two pretty angry ball clubs right there. So something's going to have to give there, and that could be a real sleeper of a series to watch this week. You feel sorry for Chris Irvin, and he pitches hard out. And then Edward Quelo also threw so well on Sunday afternoon. And, you know, that's a good sign. Maybe those two guys will be the guys you end up relying on in the top of the rotation. That's just the way things can work out. So we'll know a lot more about this Railcats team by the end of next week.
Kleber and Railroaders, Kevin, they sweep a Sioux City team at home, take all three of the Sioux City winds up getting in the last day. You're right. Winds up battling back to win 6-5, then go to Kansas City and get swept. So they wind up going 3-4 during the week. Kansas City's on the roll. We'll talk about that here in a little bit right now. But, you know, you figure a Cleveland team looking for some champion aspirations right here, and to lose all three of those games in Kansas City, I think this team has really struggled since Ryan Hernandez got signed. And I wonder if maybe this offense is, you know, just not nearly as formidable without him in the lineup.
Yeah, hitting only .242 as a team in the last week, and Phil Alexander is still putting up just consistently fabulous numbers for this team. I just think he is such an underrated player in this league, but a guy like Delino Shields, who you expect would be dominating the league, it really hasn't. He's been scrapping. He's 6 for his last 27, .222 clip. You expect more out of him at the top of your order. Jose Sermo, though, is getting it together, knocking in 13 runs in the last week with 4 home runs. He was a guy that I was giving some consideration to for Player of the Week. But the pitching has not been there for the Railroaders in this last week, and they just didn't have an answer for the Kansas City Monarchs over the weekend.
You know, going back to the Shields for a moment for me, Kevin, in this league, a catcher throwing out base runners is not an automatic kind of thing. I mean, we've seen a lot of good catchers, great behind the plate in terms of, you know, blocking pitches and calling great games and great at the plate with a bat, but we haven't seen, you know, a catcher throw out 26% of base runners. Okay, you're not really seeing that in this league. So when I see Delino Shields, a major league guy, thrown out 3 of 10 times, am I being a little too critical? I just think that seems like a little bit much for a guy with that kind of experience and speed to be thrown out that many times in this league. Am I being too critical on that?
And that may be a reason why he's only attempted 10 stolen bases so far. That seems to be not a lot of attempted stolen bases for a guy you'd figure would be swiping a bunch of them.
A guy who stole 100 bases in the minors 1 year. You know, I mean, I'm not expecting him to steal 80 bases in the season, but I guess I was just a little surprised by that stat. But okay, well, there we go. Let's jump down there to the West, Kevin. Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks, 4-game winning streak, 7-3 in their last 10. They hold a half-game lead in the division as we are we're almost done here in Kansas City. So Kansas City could be tied for the division lead when this evening is over with. But Redhawks finally catching fire out there, Kevin. Let's begin with Davis Feldman, though. as his contract purchase and headed to affiliate ball?
The second person we've had on this season that has had his contract transferred, first being Dan Vaughn. So,
Yes, it was.
So if you're a player out there, have a good week. Come on the show. You'll get signed.
And Nick Harold could be on his way out. We didn't have him on, but we had his manager on. So he might be on the way out there. And we should say that this was pretty common for us over the last few years. I think we had Kevin McGovern on, and he got signed by the Cardinals like 2 days later and stuff. So it's pretty common for that kind of thing. We're back in the swing of the Kevin and Rob transfer success. So we'll hope that will continue.
We should get a few bucks out of their $15,000.
A hamburger. I mean, we're not asking for much, man. We're just, it's something. That's all we're looking for.
You don't even have to put pickles on it. Yeah.
Exactly right. The team winds up taking 2 out of 3 against Sioux Falls, then takes the first 2 against Lincoln. The final game of that was suspended. We'd be made up later in August when Lincoln comes back to Fargo-Moorhead. But this team, you know, kind of lingering around, trying to figure out what's going on. But I think the biggest story for them, Kevin, is Reed Burlingmeier has his contract purchased. Guy was dominating and saved. But, man, you have a nice Alex DeBoard waiting in the wings for him. So they don't really wind up missing a beat here with the guy who led the league in saves last year.
I'm trying to figure out what they're doing with DeBoard, if they're just trying to ease him in or not pitch him as often, because the first save opportunity after Burlingmeier left was given to Tanner Riley. And Riley he's definitely earned the opportunity, and he got the save on Friday night versus Lincoln, the second-year pitcher that showed some glimpses last year. So I don't know, maybe they're just easing DeBoard in and not rushing him by putting him in high leverage situations. But if Riley can keep throwing like he has and DeBoard can eventually get to where he needs to be, where he can be closing again, that's a great combo in the back of the bullpen. You know, guys like Salgado and McGuire have thrown well too. So just a matter now who they're going to get to replace Feldman's spot in the rotation. It looks like the Correll Prime experiment is working out pretty well, so you got a good 3 starters there if Prime keep doing this with Grauer, Prime, and McGovern. So just a matter of who's gonna join those 3 at the top of the rotation. But you know, Fargo had the same situation last year too, with losing a guy like Ryan Flores earlier in the year, and that opened the door for Tyler Grauer to come out of the pen and become one of the best starters in the league. So, you know, with a guy like Jeff Bediger up there with his connections, you know there'll be some young stud, a Peyton Wigginton type, that will come in and help out their rotation.
You know, the interesting thing about this team, Kevin, is that 290 batting averages the last week, but they really have not put up the numbers I think we expected out of this club. And you look at 1 through 8, if you want to have a little less of a respect for Nick Novak, okay, well, you know, we'll say that's not a prime hitter out there. Okay. And no offense, Nick, but I don't think we were expecting you to hit 310 with 18 homers or something, but it's still a solid guy. Okay. But the 1 through 8, this is probably the best lineup in the American Association. And right now they have not really put up huge numbers. You know, Dylan Thomas has, 3 homers right now? I think 292. I think we thought bigger out of him. I get John Silviano. I mean, I figured working off that leg is going to take him a little bit of time to get back to his swing. But I'm not, you know, 2 guys hitting above 300. I think if you're the rest of the American Association and you're going out there and thinking, man, these guys really haven't hit yet. When these guys hit, this could be this is going to be a brutal club to face out there. And could we see a second half where this club goes like 39-11 or something? I mean, I feel like that's what the Redhawks are just destined to do here at some point.
In the 2 games I saw up in Fargo last week, it looked like Prime, Pena, were both, and even Silviano, were both starting to break out a little bit. So I think you're starting to see it a little bit, and we know how good these guys can be. That you're right. If they get on track, watch out for this lineup. Evan Alexander has been great for them this year. He's been a savior at the top of the lineup, and Manny Boscan, although he had a little bit of a rough week, he's been his usual self too. So I just think it's just a matter of time before we really see this lineup break out, and when they do, watch out, American Association. But how about that Sam Dexter on Saturday night? Folks, if you haven't yet, it was a wild game in Fargo on Saturday night. Lincoln put up 4 runs in the, I believe, top of the 10th. Fargo came back for 4 in their half with a big Correll Prime home run to help tie the game. But Sam Dexter hit the game-winning home run, and if you get a chance, go find it. It's on the American Association Baseball Facebook page and Twitter. And listen to Jack Michaels' call, because it was that was one of the more excitable Jack calls I have ever heard in my time. I think he had a Marge sprinting to track that ball down.
You don't see the Sam Dexter walk-off home run too often, but that was pretty impressive for sure. Well, let's jump down to the number 2 team, Kevin, and about to be tied here at the top of the division. That we're leading 2-0 here in the bottom of the 8th over the Lincoln Salt Dogs. The Kansas City Monarchs started out the season 1-5, Kevin, but 12-3 since, including 8-2 over the last 10. We were looking for some hitting out of this club, and all of a sudden, man, this club's starting to put some runs together and looking pretty dangerous.
Yeah, Herman the Monster doesn't seem to be letting up at all. Still hitting above 400, he's already got 30 RBIs. I mean, that's just crazy. And that's a guy I just can't believe nobody has picked up yet. An experienced catcher, and he's hitting that good. You can't imagine at some point somebody's going to sign him. But, we were talking about Yan Hernandez struggling. Well, now he's up to 284. He's got 16 runs batted in. He's not hitting for power yet, but at least the batting average has creeped up for him. So it's a dangerous lineup from top to bottom, when these guys are hitting up there to their potential. So, and if they keep that up, watch out West Division, because it could be another race between Kansas City and Fargo-Moorhead.
The one thing I thought was very surprising, because you and I talked last week about, I was not very, very impressed with this Kansas City pitching staff coming out of spring training, and no disrespect to them, but it just didn't seem like this was going to be an eye-popping group. But after losing 11-7 to Lincoln last week, Monday, they gave up 11 runs over the final 5 games of that week, all victories for the club. And the pitching staff looked great. Starting staff was great for them, got an outstanding bullpen performance out there. It looks like they've really figured out who's going to be what in this rotation, who's going to be what in the bullpen, I mean. Patrick Weigel's doing a good job closing out games for them. This is a team I think you really look at and you think, if they're going to get starting pitching like that, then I think Fargo has a lot, they're going to have some serious competition, because the Monarchs aren't going away.
That's even with a guy like a Brandon Finnegan with major league pedigree. We thought that he was just going to be a lights out pitcher in this league. Well, his ERA is up over 4, so they haven't got what they wanted out of him so far. But if he can get on track, and like the other guys you mentioned, if they keep throwing well, it's going to be a impressive pitching staff. Alex Valdez, who was a late season sensation for the Monarchs, he just pitched his first game last night. He struck out 2-1 inning to work and looked really good. So if you got Valdez also in the back of that bullpen, I think Kansas City is setting themselves up for a pretty good run here.
The team I think is in a little bit of trouble here right now, Kevin, the Sioux City Explorers. Just right now kind of falling down and can't figure out how to get up at this point. 11-11, 2-8 in their last 10. Let's remember, this was a team that came out of the gate 7-1, but 4-10 since. And just a club that really kind of reminds me of last year. You're looking at it, you're going, well, you lose a 3-2 game, okay, and then you get some offense. You get 7 runs a couple of nights later, but then you find a way to lose 8-7. And a lot of 1-run games, 1- and 2-run games for this club. I know C. Montgomery was thinking, man, I hope this isn't deja vu from last year.
It's been a lot of extra inning losses. It's been a lot of late inning losses. It's been a lack of hitting with men on base that's just killed this team. And it's too bad. I mean, you got a couple guys off to very good starts with Matt Lloyd and Fernandez. But other than that, there just hasn't been much support for them. Kyle Kasser's had off to a decent start, but boy, it just drops off after this. Chase Harris, who you expected to be a force, he's batting .235. So there's just not a lot of offense cooking for this team right now. And when they do, it seems like it happens to be a night where the pitching's not there. So you have to feel for Steve Montgomery, because you have to imagine he felt pretty good about this team after the hot start. But boy, they've really fallen onto hard times in the last week.
Yuri Perez, a guy that they were expecting a lot of things out of, former major league guy as well, been battling some nagging injuries, released by the club today. That's kind of a big blow to them. Miguel Sierra, after looking very good for them at the end of last season, has struggled mightily out of the gate. You know, they required Delvin Zinn just basically to tell Sierra, hey, look, you got to get your game together, and that just does not happen. I have a feeling this guy's going to wind up being released pretty soon here. So, this is a team that absolutely has to get spectacular pitching every single night, and they're just not getting that lately. And 5.59 ERA over the last week, Kevin. Bullpen has struggled. Starting staff has struggled for them. This could be a very tough stretch of games for the Explorers right now.
A tough blow yesterday. Mitchell Verber came back from a hamstring injury. It looks like he aggravated that. He only got through the first inning before he was removed. Jared Weatherby, has had a very good start for them in Cleburne, 1 run in 7 innings in what turned into an extra inning battle. And Solomon Bates, he deserved a much better fate on Friday night too, as he was spectacular for 8 innings before hitting the wall against the King County Cougars. So they do pick up Carlos Diaz to help bolster the bullpen, so that will be a help. But you're right, there's not a lot of room for error right now with the way the team's hitting. The pitching's going to have to be what's going to lead this team, because the bats just aren't doing it. You know, they're going to have a stretch too coming up where they're going to lose Matt Lloyd and Jake Sanford to some kind of qualifying tournament for Team Canada. So that will hurt losing those bats in the lineup also. So you might see some new names coming into Sioux City in the next week here.
And, you know, Kevin, the team would normally feel pretty good with the fact of Sioux Falls coming to town, usually a club they have a lot of success against, but well, those Canaries all of a sudden caught fire here. After dropping 2 of 3 to Fargo, they take 3 of 4 from the Railcats here, including tonight's victory 3-2 there. They're winning a lot of close games. Every one of those games against the Railcats was a one run ball game. They got 3 of 4 out of them, and they beat Fargo 4-2. Now, this is a team that's battling through, getting some better production, better starting pitching right now, and the Canaries are looking like they might give a little bit of a run here.
And don't let those last two game scores in Fargo fool you. The games got away from them late, but they were in both games late. So I'm seeing a lot of life from this ball club, but you might not be able to tell it with the statistics, but there is hope for this team. And as long as I think it's a matter of confidence too, and I'm thinking that winning the games like they did the last 2 days, winning low-scoring games in addition to winning slugfest, I think it's going to be great for this ball club. And I think they could be a team that are going to sneak up on some people.
Yeah, I think the one thing you're really happy about is the turnaround by Ty Culbreth. 2.77 ERA over his last two starts, our guy who was coming out and getting hammered early on, but all of a sudden has put things together. And if they can just get, I know we always talk about the pitching part of this. This is a club that I just felt like if you had two really dependable starters for this team, and you have three other guys that can give you five reasonable innings, maybe no more than four runs, and you get a good bullpen performance out of the team, they can be competitive. And if they can get Culbert to continue to deliver and Neil Lang pitches like he did on Sunday, there might just be enough there to sneak a team like this into third or fourth place. I mean, I think that they have a legitimate shot of getting into that final, one of those final playoff spots in this division.
If you're looking for a guy to keep an eye on in this Sioux Falls pitching staff, it's Chris Harden. Harden had his first professional start against Fargo-Moorhead on Thursday night. Went 5 1/3, gave up 3 runs, but both base runners that he left scored. But he just attacked the strike zone, did not look like a rookie at all. Only walked one batter, struck out 5, but he was around the strike zone, had really good stuff, and I think Mike Myers got something good with Harden. And we'll see if he can carry that on to his next start. Angel LeBron, in his second outing, went 3 innings, only gave up 1 run to the Red Hawks. I thought maybe that might put him in the rotation, but Meyer had LeBron pitch out of the pen over the weekend, so maybe he feels like his value right now is more so as a reliever. So you got to wonder with Walters and Wyatt, guys are in the bullpen last year, but they're starting. Maybe at some point you maybe give Angel LeBron a spot start and get those guys back in the bullpen where they had success last year. So it'll be an interesting team to follow, but I just think don't sleep on this ball club.
Well, I'm in agreement with you on that, especially considering you look at the Winnipeg Goldeyes here now, Kevin, have a very successful homestand where they win 6 of the 9 contests, then head south of the border, swept in Chicago, swept in Lake Country, and all of a sudden a team that looked like they were in a pretty solid position to start making some waves out there, battling to try to even keep themselves above water right now.
This is looking more like the Goldeyes team that I was expecting this year, a team that was going to struggle to score runs, and that's happened in the last week with the team was only batting .236 for the week. You got a positive sign with Max Murphy, who had 4 home runs over the week and batted .320, but there wasn't much else helping them, and that was a key part of them going 0 for the week, and the pitching staff did not look very good either with the team having a 7.88 ERA. Granted, 3 of those games are at Impact Field where the ball will fly out of that ballpark, and they're catching they caught a Lake Country team that's starting to find their game too. So, but it's just not a good sign.
Yeah, 51 runs the pitching staff gave up last week, and that includes, if you think about, a 3-2 loss to Chicago in the second game of that series. So they gave up 9 or more runs in 3 of the 6 games last week, 14 run performances they gave up. But on a positive note, though, Kevin, Deshaun Crowles gets his hitting streak up to 18 straight games, and I didn't know anything really about this guy heading into the season. I looked up kind of the stats for him and talked a little bit about him during previews writing up to the year getting underway. But, man, this would look like quite the find there for manager Greg Tiger.
Yeah, well, he better be careful. He's going to find himself signed.
Yes, he will. Things are not going to look good for Winnipeg for sure at that point. We should mention Kansas City wins 2-0 here tonight, Kevin. So they are tied with the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks atop the division at this point. So let's close out here, Kevin. Excuse me, with the Lincoln Salt Dogs. We should begin this by talking about Nick Anderson, named today by us and by the league as the top player in the week, hit .438, 4 homers and 9 RBI in 5 games. Anderson has been a huge bright spot in this lineup. This has not been a very formidable offense for this team. Anderson has really been the difference so far.
Boy, is he ever. We saw him in spot duty with Kane County, put up decent numbers, but he's been really given a chance to be out there every day with the South Dogs and has taken advantage of it and just off to an incredible start.
Yeah, fantastic performance by this team. But again, after that, though, Kevin, this is a team just not getting much great production. Connor Panassas played very well for them, and they got Drew Devine, who's also played very well. But beyond about 4 guys in this lineup, Luke Roskam's been very solid behind the plate. But after that, you're just, you know, you're kind of hoping you're getting something most nights. All those guys, and I understand battling through some injuries early on, but Will Kenger, I think what this team was really depending on to be an offensive force, and just trying to get a swing right now, and that's just another bat that they're struggling to try to get something going here.
You just have to wonder, you know, how far of a hole can they get in before they're going to find themselves a little bit buried in the standings? And in that West Division, if, you know, we're talking about, well, we've talked about 3 teams playing very well. Well, doesn't give you a lot of leeway. You got to beat 2 other teams just to get in that 4th spot.
You know, Kevin, I liken Lincoln very much to Sioux City. This is a team that is going to be totally dependent upon how their pitching performs, and you're just not going to get a great offense. I just don't see this. This team is not going to score 5-6 runs on a regular basis. They need to hold teams to like 2 or 3 runs on every night if they're going to win 55 games, 52 games, let's even say. And pitching staff really struggled last week. And I think if you're your manager, Brett Jody, you're kind of looking around and going, I might have to be making some moves here because I got to have a staff that dominates, and they're just not getting that at this point.
And they blew another late inning lead, losing that 4-run lead in Fargo with Stephon Moore and Matt Cronin being the culprits of that. So right now, nothing's really working for them, the starting staff nor the bullpen. So could be open audition time for the Lincoln South Dogs.
And you see another example tonight, Liz, 2-0 to Kansas City. Not a great pitching performance, but no offense there for the team. Well, I think that takes us around the American Association right now. Let's quickly jump out into the Frontier League. Once again, the Gateway Grizzlies still leading this division out there at 15-5, holding a 2-game advantage over the Schaumburg Boomers. In the East Division, the Sussex County Miners are 13-6. They hold a two-and-a-half game edge, over the New York Boulders, and a three-game edge over the Tri-City Valley Cats. A little bit of a jumble up there at the top of the division out there. For them, Griffin Baker, from Sussex County, named as the pitcher of the week after tossing a 9-inning complete game shutout where he struck out 9 and allowed just 1 hit in his 1 start last week. And Carson McCusker from Tri-City is the top player of the week, hit 3 homers, had a .565 batting average, and 9 RBI last week. So congratulations to both those guys. Looking around the transactions for them, nothing particularly exciting in terms of connections to the American Association out there, so we will bypass that. Out in the Atlantic League, the York Revolution leading the North Division by a half game over the Southern Maryland Blue Crabs. And in the South Division, the Gastonia Honey Hunters. All of a sudden, man, this division is a two-team race out there. It's just Gastonia 24-9, 24-10 for High Point, which are half game out, and then it is 8 games to the next opponent after that. So a two-team race in the first half of the season out there in the Atlantic League, and they also did not have any particularly noteworthy transactions related to American Association baseball for us. And not to be American Association-centered, but that's the way we are, so we're just going to roll with it anyway. Okay.
Oh,
so there
touché,
we are.
Rob. Touché. You missed one. Missed one, buddy.
What did I miss?
Tanner Keast.
Oh, yeah, I didn't
have to
mention
that.
Full
season hero with the St. Paul Saints in 2019. Got signed by the San Francisco Giants. I didn't even know he was still in baseball.
Yeah, when you sent that to me, Kevin, I had to say, when I was looking at that going, wow, I totally kind of forgot about him. But, yeah, made it into the Giants. Fantastic. So, and Tanner was a guy, let's remember, that for fans out there, came out of the Milwaukee Milkmen organization to take over the closer's role for the Saints, helped to lead the team to the title, and then was not really the same guy the next year. COVID kind of year got crazy for him and everything like that, and then we never really heard from him again. But comes out of the Frontier League and gets himself to the Giants. So congratulations on that. So you are right.
Yes, the last I heard, he was coaching somewhere and not even in baseball anymore. And then I run across that story. I was like, wow.
Yeah, that was congratulations, Dan. Because, you know, that's just sometimes I got to admit, Kevin, is that I'll lose track of a guy down further. If we don't see his stats or anything pop out there. Sometimes it just doesn't really occur to us. And he was having some credible years out there in the Frontier League. He had 3.12 ERA in 2022 for Joliet. For New York, he really struggled in 2021. Had a 6.53 ERA and then was rolling in Joliet early on this year and got himself a contract with the Giants organization. So good for him out there. Fantastic job. We're liking it. I think that is it for us, except for we should start saying, did we get to have the exciting KLPR next week?
I'm going to wait till teams get to the 30-game mark, so at least there's 30% of the season gone through before we get into the power rankings, because, boy, as we saw from last week with teams hitting the skids and teams getting on a roll like Milwaukee has, that, you know, that those rankings can start hopping around quite a bit. So I found generally just kind of wait for things to calm down a little bit, and you're just going to get a better read on who the best teams in the league actually are at that time. So you have to just put up with my Sunday insiders until then.
And we're enjoying those out there, too. Good insights, for sure. I did want to also mention, too, this kind of a weird situation. But infielder Luis Aviles, it might be, was actually sent back from the Lake Country Dockhounds to the club that his contract belonged to in Mexico. But then that transferred on to the Houston Astros organization. So I know the Dockhounds were saying, hey, we want to congratulate our guy who's transferred to the Astros, but I guess if you want to be technical about it, he really went back to the Mexican League and then on to the Astros organization. But either way, we're still happy. That was a nice pickup for them. As we mentioned, Reed Burlingmeier goes to the Texas Rangers organization, is transferred from Fargo. Two big hits for the Redhawks there, too, Kevin. And I think that was all the transfers. I believe that's four so far this season now from the American Association since the season began that have headed back to Major League Baseball. Give me an over-under, Kevin. How many guys wind up getting contracts transferred this year? What do you think?
I'm going to say 24.
24. I like that number. That's a good number. I think the league would be very happy with that. So I know that's a pretty solid number. I think that's it for us, though, tonight, Kevin. So let's get to the best part of the show, the Kevin Lupo final thoughts.
Well, not going to rehash my road trip. If you want to read about it, go to 10thinningstretch.blogspot.com. But what I am going to talk about is I found a real respect for what these teams, you know, whether it be the players, the coaches, the trainers, the broadcasters, the bus drivers, all have to go through when they do these week-long road trips. Because, you know, I found myself at times on Saturday, I forgot what state I was in. I was at a store, a Fleet Farm in Sioux City, Iowa, and I saw, like, all this Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl merchandise, and I thought, why is there Chiefs stuff here? Like, where am I? I actually had to ask myself where I was, because the road trip started off with Fargo and then went down to Sioux City, and I had been on the road for so many days, it just become road weary, I guess, after a while. So it just opened my eyes to what these guys have to go through during the season, especially, you know, the teams that end up having like these nine-day road trips. I don't know how these guys do it. You know, you're packing, you're unpacking, you're in a hotel room with a bed you're not familiar with, and you know, all my credit for these guys to go through that and still be able to play the toughest game there is to play in baseball. So, you know, so as far as my final thought, hats off to what. For the grind that these players have to go through during a 100-game season in a matter of 3 months.
I'm 100% behind that final thought. Fantastic. Kevin and I once again want to thank Ken Huckabee for joining us here tonight. For Kevin Lukel, I'm Rob Pannier. We'll see you next time on This Week in the Association.